Welcome to the Masks Off for People Pleasers and Perfectionists podcast. I am Kim Gross, your host, and it is my mission to help you unmask from people pleasing and perfectionistic behaviors so that you can finally have the confidence to live the life that you truly desire. Let's tune in to this week's episode. Today, my guest is Jameel Syed. Thank you so much for being here. And again, this is Masks Off, which means that we take off our masks, we show up vulnerable, we show up as we are, honest, real, and unfiltered. And so that is what we're doing here today. Some of you are listening audio, but this is also going on video as well. So you will see that Jameel is in his car and he was in a place vacationing and the internet and the cable went out. And so he had to drive 15 minutes away to be able to be here with me and all of you. And so we are so grateful that you did that. So thank you. And I'm going to start with a quote as I normally do, and then we'll jump into the conversation.
Perfect.
So the quote is by Rumi, and it is, "Why do you remain in prison when the door is wide open?" And I'm ready to dive right into that quote, but I'm going to hold myself back for a moment and first start with letting you, Jameel, introduce yourself in your own words. Tell us who you are. Tell us your story and what you do. And then how did you get to do what you do? I know you have such an interesting and compelling story. So do share with us.
Thank you so much, Kim. I deeply appreciate you having me. And for everyone who's listening, thank you so much for taking the time to be here. And it's beautiful snowing around me in the middle of a parking lot. It's great. And yeah, so I love it. My answer will wrap up like all in one sharing. A little bit about me is I'm somebody who loves people. I love seeing people lit up, turned on, loving their life and loving themselves. Mm-hmm. And I've spent 20 years now figuring out what are the blocks to that? What prevent people from doing that? My journey led me in multiple directions. It brought me to medical school and to become a naturopathic doctor. It brought me to energy healing with Reiki and Ho'omana, which is a Hawaiian form of energy work. It brought me to coaching for the last 20 years around business and relationship and mindset and how are people showing up. And ultimately, the biggest aspect of my story that seems relevant to share right now with our listeners, especially with the topic of our podcast, Masks Off. When I was 19 years old, I was a sophomore and undergraduate in New York City. And I had this moment, I was part of this pre-med group, and they essentially said, hey, every year we have to go to Albany, the capital, to fight to keep our funding. You're one of our students, you're getting benefit from the program. Would you mind going and supporting? And I said, yeah, sure, I'll be there. We leave Friday morning, we get back Sunday night. And around Tuesday, my intuition started to speak to me. And it basically said, something's not right, don't go. Mm-hmm. It was very specific. And it was like a whisper, and I just ignored it. And then Wednesday, it was a little bit louder. Something's not right, don't go. And for our listeners, think about right now, is your intuition speaking to you at all? And have you been ignoring it? And so I continued to ignore it. Thursday, it was yelling at me. Something's not right, don't go. And I finally got to a point Thursday night where I said, you know what, I have to listen to this. I don't know what it is. I don't know why, but I need to go with this. Friday rolls around, the group leaves, normal day. Saturday, normal day. And at that point, Saturday night, I was thinking maybe that was nothing and I missed out on the opportunity. Sunday morning changed my whole life. And on Sunday morning, my dad had a brain aneurysm. And for anyone who's not familiar, think of it like you have a blood vessel in the brain. Imagine like a tube starts to balloon out. And if you're fortunate, you have one of the worst headaches of your life. You go to the hospital. Hopefully they take care of you and you're able to leave and go home. My dad wasn't as fortunate and his aneurysm ruptured. Now he was in a locked room and I broke the door to get him out. And if I wasn't home, he would have passed away. Mm-hmm. And so listening to that intuition was one of the best things that I ever did. And when we were in the hospital, we were told that it was the worst aneurysm the neurosurgeon ever saw. He put the chance of survival at less than 5%. And then if he did survive, he'd be in a coma and likely never wake up. And he survived the surgery. And I remember walking into that room being told by the doctors and nurses, he's in this hypercritical state and he could pass away at any moment. And I had this immense sense of regret. And the regret that I was 19, he was 49. And the regret was I took my relationship with my dad for granted. The regret was I didn't know my dad the way that I could have. And as a result of that, I felt like I blew it. I felt like I wasn't going to have another opportunity. And then I was very fortunate that we had 3 years with him before he passed away. He was in a coma for several months, but he came out of it. And I took several years off after college to be one of his primary caregivers. And anyone who's done that knows you get tested in every way, physically, emotionally, mentally, spiritually, when somebody's dependent on you essentially 24/7. And in those 3 years, you know, he never got 100% back to the way he was. But in those 3 years, I had some of my biggest realizations and aha moments. I had first, on the one hand, my prayers were answered. I got to spend 10 to 15 hours a day with him, and we did everything together. On the other hand, there were some really dark moments. There was moments where he forgot who I was. There was moments of him having 3 to 5 minute seizures in my arms, and I didn't know what to do, and the phone's across the room, and times where he almost died several times. And I started to recognize when I said goodnight to my dad, the question arose, what if I never see my dad again? What if I wake up tomorrow and he's not here anymore? And I started to recognize that every day can be a miracle. Every day can be miraculous and magical if we show up from that space. And one day it hit me. I kept thinking, when is dad going to get back to quote unquote normal? When's he going to go back to the way that he used to be? Without realizing that what I was doing whenever I thought that was I wasn't being with him as he was right now. And because of that, even though I didn't word it this way, I was essentially making him less than bad or wrong for being the way he was and putting this pressure, even if I never spoke it, that he's supposed to be the way he used to be. And I think very often we do that unintentionally. We relate to people we care about the way they used to be, not the way they are right now. And when I stopped doing that and I just fully fell in love with the way he was in that moment, and I said, what if I played with the idea that he's never going to be any better than he is right now? Can I love him as he is right now? And when I did that, my relationship and my experience of him and just of life was so much better. And then I started to realize this could be my last day with my dad, but it also could be my last day with my mom and my sister and my friends and myself. And none of us know when our last moment is. And so I started living every day as if it was my last. All my interactions with people, I started really treating this like this might be the last time I see you. And one of the things I love is when you believe something so truly that it becomes a part of you, how you show up, people feel it. And very often they speak it into you, not even knowing that you're trying to do that. So I'll give you an example. I'm known for my hugs in person. And one of my cousins told me one day, I love your hugs. Every time you hug me, I feel like you're never going to see me again. And I love the way she said that because I never put words to it like that. And I got tears in my eyes when she said it because I might not ever see her again. Now I get to be with you and your audience, and this might be the last interview I ever do. I might die on the way back to the Airbnb, right? And so it's like, how do I know? So I'm going to show up with everything I've got every single time because it's not a rehearsal. This is the real thing. And at the end of the 3 years, so two of my cousins had passed away during those 3 years. One was 20 and one was 21. They were both sudden. And if you asked either guy when they were 18, what do you want to do with the rest of your life? Tell me your goals, your dreams, your vision. I promise you neither guy would say I'd be dead in less than 3 years. And there's this like kind of Buddhist philosophy. It's the problem is you think you have time. And it's, I hope you have time, but none of us know. And so there I was at the end of the 3 years, my dad passed away. And I just remember being at his wake and over 7,000 people came. And I shook every single person's hand. My dad was a family practice physician, and almost everyone said, your dad saved my life. And it was people from every culture, country, religion, dress, everything you can imagine. And it was A, very humbling. But the second part, which is very key to the name of the podcast and our conversation today, I had this insight, this moment of realization that I'd been playing small, that I cared way too much about what people thought about me. And because of that, I was afraid of rejection. And I was robbing the world of who I could be. And I was replacing it with who I thought that they wanted me to be or who I was supposed to be. One of my favorite words is enthusiasm. And it comes from entheos or antetheos. And it means the God within. It's a Greek word. When you radiate enthusiastically, you're radiating that inner divinity that makes you, the uniqueness that is you, that nothing or no one rather could ever replicate. And yet most of us who wear a mask, and the mask, in my opinion, says, who do I need to be for you to love me? who do I need to be accepted and to be normal and to be part of the in-group or whatever you want to call it. The challenge with that is when you wear the mask and people seem to like you, you think you win. But when you win that game, you really lose because they don't know you. They know your mask. And that's why in relationships, there's that cliched expression after a certain period of time, one partner says to the other, you've changed. Very often, it's not that they changed. They're actually finally allowing themselves to be themselves. It's just that they didn't lead with that. So yes. The person fell in love with somebody else.
Yes.
And so at the end of the 3 years, like I said, the wake happened and I had this moment of realization. I've been playing small and I made this decision that, you know, two of my cousins had passed away at 20 and 21. At that point, I was 22. So like this could happen at any moment. Why am I robbing the world of who I could be? And I made a commitment to not do that ever again. And I shifted the way I live my life and I stepped into my power in a way that I never had before. And I started just owning who I am and what I believed and what I felt like I was here to do in the world and supporting others and doing the same. And then that journey led me to medical school after I went there for 5 years in Arizona and continued my coaching. I've been coaching for 20 years now, doing it professionally for about 6 and doing it for free for about 14 prior to that. And it's been such a wonderful experience to partner with people on their journey, to support them in creating miracles in their life. And when I say that, what I mean is, here's something that you didn't think was possible, either for you or just in the world, is a result that you thought wasn't realistic, or you thought it was 10 years out, whether in business or relationship or whatever, and to help people make that come true in 9 months, to help people create things. I just had a client the other day, and we've been working together for about 3.5 years. And at the end of our session, he just reflected back to me how different his life is now than it was 3 years ago. And it's things that he never thought were either possible or they were at least 10 years out. And it's incredible to me that when you step into who you're supposed to be, like a powerful question for our guest to be with is, am I being the me that I believe I should be being? And only you can answer that. And when you hear the question, an answer will come to you. It's either going to be a resounding yes, because there's a feeling of just, it's like a calm yes, of course. Or there's going to be a constriction or a heaviness or some sense of knowing that at some level you're not being authentic to your heart or to your spirit. And it's not until you resolve that, that you're going to feel that sense of peace. And so I will pause there and send it back to you.
Oh my goodness. There's so much in there that I want to unpack. I first will say that you shared with me before on our last call, the story of how you put your head down at night on the pillow and you ask yourself, did you have any regrets? And I will honestly say that since you shared that with me, I've been doing that every night. So I want to start by thanking you, because at the end of the day, it really does allow us to pause. It's allowing me to pause when I put my head down on my pillow and ask myself that very powerful question of, am I living my life without regrets? And for me, it's even a step further. Am I living without masks? Am I living authentically? Am I showing up as my true self? And then if the answer is no, where am I still falling into my patterns? Where am I still falling into putting my mask on? And then how can I work at unmasking, or what wound in me still needs some more TLC, some nurturing? Where is my inner child still afraid that I'm showing up with the mask, so I'm not living my life without regrets? So I want to take it back to the quote for a moment, because it's so powerful and it's so apropos. So why do you remain in prison when the door is wide open? And this is what we're talking about. And I talk about in my podcast, I'm now writing a book, so I'm talking about it a lot in my book. And when you talked about the relationships, when you show up with a mask on with other people in your life, that, and all of a sudden you start to take the masks off, they're like, who the F are you? I don't know this person. You're not the person that I met 30 years ago. And I'm seeing that theme unfold in real time in my book. That's why I shared that again. But the prison part is when we are living out a pattern and not a life. when we're living according to, and I talk all the time about people pleasing and perfectionism. So that's what keeps us stuck in this prison. And the quote, why do you remain in prison when the door is wide open? So I talk all the time about why, but I would love to hear from you, your thoughts on why you think people remain in that prison. And when we're talking about prison, I'm going to clarify for the listeners. We're talking about the prison of the mind. This is not like a literal prison. We're talking about being imprisoned in our mind by our thoughts, by our patterns, by our history, and all of that stuff. So in your opinion, your thoughts, why do you think that we stay in this prison when the door is wide open?
Yeah, absolutely. First, I want to acknowledge you for taking that question to heart from our last conversation and then just applying that into your own life. And if I may just share that to start my response, the way that I worded it to you, that I'd love to word it to our audience, is if you went to bed tonight, and whether it was God, angel, genie, source, whatever it was for you that you said, by the way, this was your last day and you're not going to wake up tomorrow, could you fall asleep at peace? Or would you have all of these thoughts of, no, there's so many things I still want to do and I can't go yet. Like, I didn't do this yet. Then the question becomes, every day when you wake up, if today was my last day, what's worth it for me? I just asked a client of mine the other day, what's worth the next 50 years of your life?
Yeah.
And if you just reflect on that question and act on it, everything changes.
It's so powerful.
Yeah. And so if we come from the space of the prison, the metaphor I'd love to begin with is similar to what you were just talking about. So there's literal prison, like a physical bars and four walls and everything. And then there's the mental and emotional side of prison. Now, there are people in physical jail cells, a physical prison, that have a higher experience of freedom than people that are out in the quote unquote free world. Now, why is that? Because they're no longer in a mental prison. Because freedom is a concept. Obviously, there's a felt experience, but think about it like this. If I were to say stress, fun, play, can you point to that? I'm looking at freeze right now because I'm in the middle of nowhere. So if I say tree, rock, mountain, but there's no fear, you can't love, you can't find, these are concepts. We have a relationship to the world in such a way that it creates it. So freedom is like that too. There are people that are in physical jail cells, but because they're at peace with themselves, whether they came to terms with, they came to terms with what they did and they've atoned for it, and they have accepted whatever the sentence was that they got, and now they're at peace, and they're just living out their days the best way they know how. At that point, there's no longer resistance. And because there's not resistance, this person who's in physical jail experiences freedom. But there's people in the quote-unquote free world that maybe they're in a job they don't like. They feel like they're in the quote-unquote rat race, as people call it. Maybe they're not happy in their relationship. They feel bound by all these things. And as a result of that, if you say to them, do you feel free? They probably say no. And so to me, that's very interesting to be with, because if we just think about it superficially, anyone listening to this podcast, forgive my ignorance, I don't know if you can listen to podcasts in prison. So if you can, then this won't apply. But if you can't, if you're listening to this, you're not in prison. And exactly. So coming from that space, do you feel free? And if you don't, that means that your lack of freedom is based on your mind. And so it's basically, what am I buying into? So when you say, what kind of keeps people, in Rumi's words, in the prison when the door is wide open? If you're in using Rumi's quote, if you're in prison and the door is open, but you remain there, why? Well, you remain there because you don't know the door is wide open. You remain there because you don't know that the door is unlocked. There's a quote, I forgot who said it, but it's some variation of, a man will remain in the locked room when he pushes the door and he can't get it open until he realizes it's a pull. The moment he realizes he's not pushing, you can't push the door open. He's always going to be in prison until he realizes there's a way out. So each of us, we have certain beliefs. We have beliefs about ourselves. We have beliefs about the world. And we have beliefs about other people. And depending on what you believe about yourself, and this is often associated with your upbringing, what did people tell you about yourself? What did you learn? I'll give you an example. One of my clients from years ago, we did some great work together, and he told me a goal of his, that he wanted to be the number one real estate broker in the country. And this guy was like really successful. And I could tell that whether I was working with him or not, he'd get there. And I think I could help him faster. But it was really, it was exciting. And I said, I'm just interested to know, where does that come from? Like, why do you want that? And I just kept asking him that. And after maybe 7, 8, 10 times of going into it, he said, he started to cry. And he said, I just realized it's because if I'm number one in the country, maybe my dad will finally tell me he loves me. And for him, it was because when he was a kid, his younger sister was like daddy's little princess. She was perfect the way she was. She didn't have to do anything to get love. For him, he only got attention from dad when he was a straight A student and a star athlete. So he learned that love equals like performance. Love equals like my value putting out is where I get love from. So here he is trying to do all this stuff to get the validation, to get the acceptance. And so for him, until I helped him let that go, he's in a prison. There are people who make a lot of money and they still feel a void. And yet they thought, like Jim Carrey's got a great quote. I'm going to paraphrase it in case I don't get it spot on. But it's basically, I wish everybody would make just millions and millions of dollars so they could finally realize that's not going to do it for them. And it comes from the space of, we live in this space of thinking, if my external world was different, I'd feel better. And the reality is there are people that have exactly what you think you would need to feel better, and some of them don't. So it's not the thing, it's not the money, it's not the circumstance. Your sense of freedom is an internal experience. And so the question to ask yourself is, how am I relating to my life experience right now? How am I creating the feeling of being trapped? I'm telling myself a story and believing it, that I can't change my job, I can't move, I can't do whatever it is I'm doing. If I lost this amount of money, if I had to lose my house, I couldn't handle that. There's some story that you're creating as a mental prison that you're living in. I was sharing with my girlfriend this quote the other day. There is nothing more powerful than a thought believed.
Yeah.
But if you don't believe a thought, it's just a thought. It has no power at all. So yeah, it's okay.
So let's pause there for a moment, because I want to share too, just like your client that you had, that was the real estate agent. That was similar for me, my story. So before the age of 10, I knew what it felt like. I remember what it felt like to be so free, to be my true self, whether I was doing a snow angel in the snow, or I was rowing the boat on the lake up at my aunt and uncle's lake house, where every time I put the oar in the water, because the water would be so calm and so still, you could see your reflection in the water. That's how calm and still it was. And every time I took an oar and put it in the water, and one after another, like that sense of stillness, I felt a connection, like that stillness was deep inside me. And that stillness of the lake, of the sun, the sky, I knew that was me, right? So I had this innate sense that that was my true self, my true essence, and that's who I was. I felt it all the time prior to the age of 10. But then I hit puberty at 11, 12 years old. And for me, it was a horrible time in my life, because I had quickly changed in my body shape. I put on weight, I grew taller, my hips, my butt, everything just expanded like overnight. And I still have the stretch marks to show. And the boys were horrible toward me, calling me all kinds of names. And I, at the same time, felt so different from my peers, because most of them had not hit puberty yet. So they still looked like the old herd, but now I don't fit in the old herd or the tribe. And now my sense of safety, because I'm being ridiculed and I'm being ostracized, is at stake. So what do I do? What do I do? How do I protect myself? And so I protected myself by performing, perfecting, getting the straight A's, excelling in sports, playing in softball, being popular, having parties, having people drink at my house and hiding behind my mom, all those things to be accepted and to be validated all on the outside. And I tell this story all the time. That is when the people pleaser and the perfectionist mask developed for me. It's how I protected myself. So that is what kept me imprisoned, the prison of the mind, for most of my life. I didn't know what I didn't know until I knew it. And then I could change it and I could do something differently. And so now I can see that the doors are wide open. And I remember, again, before the age of 10, those doors were wide open. I felt it. I knew what that meant. But then they closed. And as I started to put one mask on after the other and just lived behind a mask for most of my life, now the door was closed for me until I started to heal and do the work. So my next question is, sometimes I still do feel that door wanting to close again. I can feel the old pattern sneak up on me and it'll come in. And like, even right now that I'm writing the book, I'm writing it with a ghostwriter and I'm feeling like this angst because it's not exactly quite how I want it to be just yet. And am I looking for perfection? Am I wanting to please him? And it's this whole thing that I'm going through right now. Yeah. And then I guess the upside of it is that I'm aware, right? I see it now. I can see, oh, there's that pattern. There's that mask. And I'm aware of it. And the door won't close completely because at the end of the day, I know how to bring myself back and I know how to remember my true self and who I am. And I can still see the door is wide open. I can see the skies are blue and I can see how the green trees were. Before, I had such a veil, I couldn't even see color that clearly. Do you know what I mean? How when you just are wearing in that cloud of whatever, unworthiness, the trance of unworthiness, you can't see how blue the sky really is or how clear the lake is or the green grass. But now, okay, I can see that. But for some of the listeners that might be saying, yeah, okay, get with the door being open, but how do I stay there? I just seem to be going back and forth and back and forth. Do you have any thoughts on what to share there?
Absolutely. And thank you so much for sharing aspects of your story. And so with that in mind, I want to preface it by saying to everything I had already shared, we have if you want to think about it it's a useful way of thinking about this. We have a conscious mind and an unconscious mind. Another way of the unconscious mind, you can say the subconscious mind, but either way, there are things that you're aware of and things that you're not. Very often, like you talked about, you did certain things out of protection. And so there's patterns that we have that developed when we were younger. Now, those patterns always began for a reason that was actually very useful, whether it was usually keeping you safe in some way or another, or it was getting love, or it was getting attention. There's needs that we have as human beings that are physical, mental, and emotional, and spiritual. And you will always find a way to meet a need. It's not a want, it's a need. Like, you have to have it. And so you'll do whatever you got to do to fit in or to not get hurt or to avoid pain or whatever it is. The challenge becomes when a pattern that served you before is no longer serving you now, but you haven't brought that lens of awareness or attention to it since you were younger. So you're running it unconsciously. Now, when you run things unconsciously, they drive you. I think it was Carl Jung. He said some variation of, until you make the unconscious conscious, it'll drive your life and you will call it fate. And so it's that space. It's almost exact. I might have missed a word or two there. But it's that idea that everyone listening, at least this is from my perspective, everyone I've ever worked with, this has been the case. I do a lot of work in the subconscious mind using hypnosis and the mental and emotional release work and diving in and clearing away traumas and limiting beliefs and all these things that we're usually not even consciously aware of, but it's what's causing us to sabotage our success. It's what's causing us to slow down. And so I think it begins with question what it is that I'm believing, because again, a thought believed has a lot of power. And so when you caught yourself, let's say, with this ghostwriter, and you're like, oh, am I trying to please this person, or is there some perfection tendency here where if it's not perfect, something's going to happen or that means something about me. And when you get it all out, there's a process by a woman named Byron Katie that I really like. And she calls it the work. And just that first question, is it true? Whatever it is that you're believing. Now, the beauty is the answer to that question is always no, even though she gives you a yes or no option, because all thought is just a perspective. No thought is true. And so when you say, is it true? You might feel like the answer is yes. That's why her follow-up question is, can you absolutely know for sure that it's true? Because if you say yes to the first, you can't say yes to the second. It's not true. And when you get to the third one, there's this question of how do I treat myself and how do I feel and how do I treat others and how do I act when I believe that thought? And then you really get to explore it. And when I believe this thought, I treat myself this way. I talk about other people that way, my husband, my wife, whatever it might be. And that last question, which is so powerful, is if I couldn't believe that thought, how would I live? How would I feel? How would I treat myself and others? And it's so amazing how liberating people get in their answers when they go, that thought didn't exist. I guess I would do this. And they give you the full recipe of what they would do. So if we tie it into whatever you practice, you get good at. If you've had some patterns your entire life, of course, it's going to be easier to run that pattern of procrastination or perfectionism or shying away from something that seems scary because you've made yourself good at that. But if that's not going to lead to the life that you want going forward, it's embracing the unfamiliar, recognizing that unfamiliar doesn't mean bad. Unfamiliar just means unfamiliar. And the thing is that anything is unfamiliar or anyone is unfamiliar until they're not. And so the only way, like you said, in your example, you were like, I know how to get back to that space, let's say, where I can act. Somebody listening might say they don't know how to get back to that space. Now, very often we're actually under acknowledging ourselves in the sense that we probably do know how to get back there. But even if you genuinely did not know how to step forward, if you can just check in on yourself and say, what if the possibility, what if this thought isn't true? This thought that I've been buying into, because look around, is it true for everybody else? There's people listening who have a book inside of them on their heart to share with the world. Some people do spoken poetry. Some people want to ask somebody out on a date. Some people want to propose. Some people want to ask for a raise, like whatever it is they're wanting to do, but they hesitate from fear and then they don't do it. And even if they overcame it 10 years from now, that's amazing. And that's 10 years of life that you weren't helping somebody that was like there's medicine on your heart to share with the world. There's people that'll only hear it from you. Like part of my work, I do coaching. There's people who would not hire some of the most famous coaches in the world, but they'd hire me because they don't resonate with those coaches. So if I've got something on my heart and I'm not sharing it because I'm afraid, because it's not quote unquote perfect, it's never going to be. And so it's like when people say I'm waiting for the right time. Yes, there is a practical component to the quote unquote right time. And very often you're ready way sooner than you think you are.
Yeah.
And so if we come from that space of where am I holding myself back? Where am I robbing the world? One of my favorite quotes is from Les Brown. And he said, the richest place in the world is the graveyard, because that's where people, their goals, their dreams, their inventions, their aspirations, the things that they came to this world to bring, it died with them. Wayne Dyer said it beautifully, don't die with your music still in you. And if we come from that space, yeah.
Yeah, that's going back to what we said in the beginning, full circle, about not having regrets and people just leaving those dreams, whatever they could offer to the world, behind. So yeah. I love that. I do want to just ask one thing, though. I'm going to play a little bit of a devil's advocate. And I totally believe in the thoughts, you know, are what is keeping us from creating what we want. So if I'm going to be challenge a little bit, is there ever a time or a situation or an instance where someone might say that their life is quote unquote a mess or whatever, and it's not from them creating it from their thoughts? Am I articulating that question well? Do you know what I'm asking?
I believe
is there
I
ever
am.
An exception to the rule?
Yes, yeah, so I'll answer it the way that I hear it. And if it's not what you mean, please correct me, okay?
Okay.
So there's two sides to life, as well as much as I'm aware of. There's the internal side of life and there's the external side of life. I'll answer it in this way first. I could tell you objectively, there is no such thing as stress. And
you at the same time could have an extremely stressful situation in your life. You could have an extreme, I'm going to change the wording on that. You can have an extremely stressful experience of anything, even though stress isn't real. So it's real for you. So it's not putting it down. It's not an objective yes. reality. So in the same way, when can somebody's life be a quote unquote mess? No, in the sense that's a judgment that we put on. So your life looks the way that it looks. Your room could be clean. Your room can be a mess. Your bank account could be overflowing with money, and you could be in the negative and be in debt. Now, we have judgments about that based on what we as a society and individuals call good and bad, clean and tidy and messy.
Yeah.
But it's not about your life being a mess. It's that your experience of life is a mess. But your experience of life is based on your relationship to it, which is internally created. So there's no such thing. I had a guy on my podcast about 2 years ago. He focuses on play and bringing play into Fortune 50 companies to make them more productive. He's all about fun and play. So I did an exercise with him, similar to what I started in our conversation today. And I said, there's a window I could tell. And I said, look out your window, point to a tree, point to a rock, point to a car, point to fun. He got it immediately and he started laughing. And he goes, that's really cool. Because fun doesn't exist.
Yeah.
But you can have an experience of fun by how you relate to life. So when somebody says, I'm really struggling, I honor that. When somebody says, I'm feeling so stressed, I honor that. And I know that the thing that they think is causing their stress isn't.
Relationship to the thing. So yeah. I'm going to use an example. Did you see the movie? Oh, I can't even think of it. Will Smith played the part Happiness. What is
Pursuit of Happiness?
The Pursuit of Happiness. Okay. So that's based on a real story. So he is living on the streets, homeless yeah. with his son. Yeah. And one could have the interpretation of that event. He could easily have been and I'm not saying he didn't feel struggle at times, but he could have easily from his mindset said, my life sucks. This is awful. I'm doomed. I'm going to go nowhere, whatever, all the things versus the way he did actually show up, which he just kept on working hard and pushing forward and one foot in front of the other. And he eventually got himself out of that situation of no longer living on the streets and being homeless. Would you say that's a good example to illustrate the point of it's not the event that is happening, it's our interpretation or our approach to it? And again, the reason I use that example is because it's pretty dire, like whether being homeless and living on the street, being raped, being a single mom who just got divorced and can barely put food on the table. Like those are the people that might say to you, Jamil, I disagree with you. My life is awful. It's bad. But you're saying it's not. And let's be sensitive to that. You're saying it's not necessarily, it's the way you interpret or the way you respond to that.
So I'll answer it like this. So I think your movie reference is definitely sufficient. And the one that comes to mind for me is there's a movie called Life is Beautiful. My understanding is that's also based on a true story. And it was a man, his wife, and a boy who all get taken to a concentration camp in Nazi Germany.
Mm.
The wife gets separated because she's with all the women. And then it's the man with his son. The wife gets killed. And now it's just the man and the son. Now, the man doesn't want, or the father, let's say, he doesn't want his son essentially to experience the harshness of this situation. Mm-hmm. And so he turns the whole Auschwitz, assuming that was where he was, but the whole concentration camp experience into a game. And the man ends up dying at the end, but the boy survives. And at least based on the movie, which again, the movie may be different than the real life experience, but it's supposed to be based on a true story. The boy, in a way, spent the entire experience having fun in a concentration mm-hmm. camp. And so in that way, I'm never meaning to be insensitive. I'm never meaning to tell anybody at all that their experience isn't what it is. There's people listening right now who are going through really difficult times. The thing, though, is if you believe that what you're feeling is caused by the external situation, then the flip side of that is you're giving your power away, because you're basically saying that I am at effect to life. Life is the cause. I am the effect. Of course, I feel what I feel. I'm in this situation. Anybody would feel this in this situation, but that's not true, because there's somebody in the world who's in the same situation as you, and they're not feeling what you're feeling, which means that is a reality that's open to you as a possibility to choose from. And so if we were to say, what empowers our listener? For the person listening, I'm talking to you. It's what empowers you rather than what's true, what's useful? What's a belief that you can adopt that shifts the way you relate to the world, that allows you to live the life that you want to live and create the impact and the money and the relationships and the health and the whatever else that you're wanting? It's the one that puts you at cause, and your external world is the effect. So if we say the external world serves as a mirror, you look at your life, whether it's your bank account, whether it's the quality of your relationship, whether it's your health. Like, there's an old expression, like the scale, like the numbers don't lie, right? You look at your bank account, the scale, the numbers tell a story. If I told you my goal is to lose 30 pounds and 3 months later I gained 30 pounds, I created the result. It just wasn't the result that I wanted. Now I can say it's because of all these things, or I can take ownership and say, how did I create that? What did I do and didn't do that created that result? The moment I'm aware of that and I own it, I can change it. And so if I believe that I feel bad, like in the Chris Gardner story, which is the Will Smith one, he's homeless, like you said, and they have a lot of difficult moments and there's a lot of tears. And I remember watching the actual man, Chris Gardner, interviewed after the fact. I think he's in Wall Street, very yes. wealthy guy now. And just hearing his story was so inspiring. And so, yeah, people have a lot of difficulty all around the world. But when you realize like, there's a family in India right now that there's 12 of them and they live in like a 200 square foot room, and yet some of those people are happier than millionaires in the US. And then you say, how is it that they're doing that? They have a different relation to the situation. They're not resisting it. They're not saying it's not supposed to be this way. I was on an interview for a radio show 2 weeks ago, and the woman said to me, when life isn't going the way it's supposed to go, and I brought up to her, I want to pinpoint that word, because that's what's causing all of your suffering. You have an internal narrative that life is supposed to be going a certain way, and the external is not matching that blueprint. And because it's not matching it, you believe something's wrong. And the challenge there is, like Byron Katie's book, is loving what is. It always starts with a level of acceptance and non-resistance. It doesn't mean love what is and don't change it. Love what is and then change it. But when you love what is and you don't resist it and you say, okay, this is my life the way it is right now, how could I relate to the situation in a way that would actually feel lighter, that would give me some more agency, a better sense of, let's say, control over my day-to-day, moment-to-moment, whatever I can do? That I just found is the most empowering way to live. And yeah. when we allow ourselves to step into that, external circumstances are going to be what they are. But think of it like this. A scientist does an experiment. In the experiment, there's a control. And there's a variable. The control stays the same and the variable is always changing. In life, you get to decide, are you the control or is life the control? I find that the most empowering way to be is that life is the variable. Life's always going to change. You're the control, which means that no matter what happens, you can always count on yourself, if you're grounded, to say, I'll be able to adapt. I'll be able to figure it out. If I fall on my face, I'll get back up wiser. And I can always figure it out and push forward no matter what's going on. Are there people that are in dire situations? Are there people that all over the world, they seem to start quote unquote behind the eight ball at a massive disadvantage? They've got all these things going on in the world. Yes. But it's still a matter of the same formula applies to them. It just might seem harder initially for them to latch onto it. But the human condition is the human condition. Yeah. I often tell people there's three stages to life. Life happens, I interpret it, I experience my interpretation. That's all that ever happens for every human being throughout all of history. Life happens is neutral. There's no judgment on that. I interpret it, people forget about that, and then I experience my interpretation, but then they think they're experiencing life. You don't experience life as it is, you experience life as you are. And so that's why your reaction to something is always different than somebody else's. The way you see it isn't the way anybody else sees it. Why? Because you're making the meaning up in your mind. And so the moment you take control of that, what's the interpretation that serves me in creating the life that I want? You'll be able to move out of any situation that you're in and your experience of it, you don't have to wait. It's not, I'll be happy when. There's a way of getting there now and then go after what you want instead of postponing the joy and the peace and the happiness for later, when almost that never works. People get that and then they still feel empty. They thought they'd be happy with their new house or the more money, yeah, or the better relationship or the divorce or the whatever. And maybe there's momentary pleasure when you get the thing you've been working at for a long time. And then at some point, it's just a car. It's just a house. You feel like you need more money. And the newness of the relationship maybe seems to fade away a little bit. And then it's, I want more. Wayne Dyer also said, where is the peace and more is better? And I love that, because more isn't better. More is different. There isn't better than here. There is just different. So if you can't have peace here, you will never have peace anywhere, because yeah, peace is only ever experienced here.
It's so true. And I've been saying to my daughter a lot lately, because she'll sometimes, and I do it too, we all do it, that what you just described. If I just change my situation, if I change my location, if I live here, I live there, or if it's summer, or if the weather's better, then I'll feel blah, blah, blah. And I've been saying to her, which has really resonated with her, is that wherever you go, there you are. I don't know who said that quote, but it's, and again, it's going back to the mind. If you are imprisoned in your mind, then that's staying in victimhood. And that's what I talk about as well in my book, as well as my podcast, is that's what it, and that's what it translated for me, is that when I lived out patterns, or I lived with the mask and I felt imprisoned, I was doing the people pleasing, the perfectionism, I was in victimhood. And I gave my power away. I gave away my freaking power. And it wasn't until I did the work and started to change the way that I think about it, the way you just described, that I was able to slowly take back my power and now to have that paradise. And so now the paradise is being able to have more freedom, being able to have more peace, more joy, to be able to be in the moment, to have more meaningful connections with others, because I'm showing up as my true self, to be able to come home to myself and be, and feel and be the way I did before the age of 10. So the only last caveat that I would want to add for someone that's listening, and it's one that does come up for me as well, and I think I was asking it early on, but I want to say it again, ask it again, clarify it, highlight it, underline it, is that yes, we can change the way we think about a situation or an event that can then change the trajectory or the outcome. But I want to be careful and sensitive, at least from my experience, to say it's not that quick and easy. You just learn to turn your thoughts around and then you're smooth sailing. It's easy from there. Because then that, to me, is going into the perfectionism, right? Yeah, it's the all or the nothing. It's like thinking that this way of recovering is a straight uphill, and it's not. It's one step forward, two steps back, one step forward, two steps back. I had an ACOA coach many years ago, Adult Children of Alcoholics, and she said, she was describing recovery. And she said, recovery is not this straight up incline. It is jagged, where you go forward and back, but all the while you are making forward movement, forward progress. So I just wanted to, because sometimes I've listened to wisdom teachers like Wayne Dyer or even Dr. Shefali and many others who are like, this is the way to wisdom. Just, or change Joe Dispenza, just change your thoughts and change your life. That is all very true, but it's not that simplistic. So maybe we can just end there.
Yeah. So I would point this out. Please forgive me if I made it seem that way. It's not that just change your thinking, because then it's more, because that would be, you're just swapping one thought out for another. It's recognizing that you are thinking. And this is what I mean by that. If you weren't thinking, the peace would be there. Mm. So it's not a matter of just reframe it and just change a thought, think positive. It's not that. It's recognizing that I have some thoughts right now about this situation that I'm not questioning and I'm just believing them. That's creating my experience. If I can just recognize, oh, that's a thought, using my three-step framework, that's an interpretation. That's just a thought. Now, the thing about thoughts are thoughts come and go. You are not that which comes and goes. You're that which remains. Mm-hmm. So you're not thoughts. You're not your beliefs. I have a metaphor I use that you alluded to earlier. There's the sky. And in the sky, there's clouds. Yeah. And we could say that the clouds represent weather. The thing is, the weather changes all the time. The sky is always there. You're the sky. You're not the weather. If you identify as the weather, your life's going to have a lot of ups and downs and highs and lows and all these things. But if you identify as the sky, and you're okay when it's sunny, and you're okay when it's rainy, and you're okay when it's cloudy, because that which you are is not threatened at all.
Yeah.
It changes your experience. And so again, for everyone listening, it's not a matter of positive think or just think something different. It's just recognize, okay, I've got a lot of thinking about this right now. I'm just not going to latch on to the thought. Mm-hmm. I'll let the thought be there. And what ends up happening is a new thought takes its place in a short period of time. Whether you go out on a walk, or you just turn something on the TV, or you have a conversation with somebody about something different. And as your thought changes, your feelings change. Everything shifts. The example I gave recently to a friend of mine is, there you are, you're angry, you're yelling at somebody, and then the phone rings or the doorbell rings, and you don't want to be seen as like angry.
Yes.
So you
you could switch it.
And then all of a sudden, you're like really nice with that person.
Yes.
And then what happens when you talk to them for 3 minutes, 5 minutes, 30 seconds? It's not as easy to switch back into the anger because you interrupted it. Because in the moment you were caught up in thought. But the thing is, people hear that, and the people who are skeptical of that, it's because they'll say, I'm not consciously doing that. I didn't think about anything. I just got angry. Unconsciously, though, there was thinking going on that generates no one's angry for no reason. You're not sad for no reason. I'm sad because it's not just, yeah, I'm sad. That doesn't happen.
Yeah, so exactly.
Of what is it that I'm thinking, and just recognize I'm thinking. Mm-hmm. Don't grasp it. Allow it to be there. And then look around for what it is that you would like to do. And as you begin moving in that direction, and also this is a longer conversation. You and I have about an hour today, 40 minutes, whatever it might be.
Yeah.
And you and I could talk about this for a whole weekend, and we would add nuances and layers. And
yes,
there's probably a lot of yes, but that people might be thinking right now. And all I ask is just take what's useful right now. If there's one thing that you or I shared in this conversation that our listeners could grab onto and say, I'm going to begin thinking about that. I'm going to apply that. Just that is going to create a new possibility into your life. And you might listen to this again after a second or third time and go, I missed that the first time. You might hear Kim and I say in a different way. And so I'm not ever, as a closing statement for me, I'm not ever trying to belittle, put down, disrespect, or disown anything anybody is feeling, experiencing, any of that. It's me saying, though, it's like, I can't help you if I'm judging you. And I also can't help you if I buy into the same story that you're buying into. And so if I can help you see your life differently, you'll be able to shift. And so it's, thank God I don't see this the way you do. Like, why are you listening to a podcast about two people who think the exact way you do? Like, you're listening to new ideas here.
Exactly. And I love that you ended there. And I'll just bring it back home for myself as well, because I asked the question more from my own knowing, obviously, my own curiosity. I wanted to talk about that. And going back to your example of the sky and the clouds, and you said the sky is who we are and the clouds are just, you know, the thoughts and the feelings that, and I often will use the analogy of the ocean and the waves. So Tara Brach uses it all the time. We are the ocean, and our thoughts, our feelings, everything else are just the waves on the ocean, but we are the waves. We are the ocean. And for me, that part about I am the sky, I am the ocean connects back to what I felt and knew. It was a knowing that I had before the age of 10, when I was doing the snow angel, when I was on the lake, when I was riding my bike and I was going down the road and I took my hands off the handlebars and the wind was blowing through my hair. That knowing of I was free, I was my true self, I was in my essence, whatever you want to call it, that I was the sky, I was the ocean, is still in me and it's in all of us always. It's that consciousness, it's that oneness consciousness, that energy that makes us up, that connects us all. It's always there.
Yeah, like we started our conversation with that Rumi quote. There's another Rumi quote, some variation of do not seek for love, seek for like walls that you've built up to keep it out.
Yes.
And that's, you can replace love with anything. So it's rather than seek peace, seek happiness, seek love, what are the blocks that are stopping you from feeling it right now? And the block is always thoughts and beliefs.
Yeah.
So it's like, what am I believing about myself, about the situation that's making me stressed? And when you recognize it's a belief, it's a perspective, it's not true in and of itself. It opens up the lens of what else could be true here? What else could I be believing? And just experiment with it. You can always go back to the beliefs you had before. If you're that old belief, keep it. But let's try on a new one just to see if life gets
just
better.
Just to see.
And when you can experiment with it like that, I said earlier, we have our patterns, we have our conditioning, we grew up a certain way, and we learn certain things. And in your example, like protection, I adopt certain patterns and beliefs to keep myself safe. But here we are decades later, that same pattern is sabotaging us. The moment you recognize it, just the thought, sometimes this works consciously, sometimes you got to do some deeper work unconsciously, but just consciously, let's say, you sit there and you go, all right, wow, I actually can trace this back. This belief started when I was 11, when I was 6, when I was 13. This happened, I made it mean that. And I could see how that really helped me. That kept me alive. That did whatever it did. But here I am now, 30 years later, I can see how that belief not only doesn't serve me right now, but it's not actually true. So for example, there's a belief when you're a child that can be very useful in the world we live in now. Don't talk to strangers. That's a really destructive belief when you get older. Because when you get older and you don't talk to strangers, have everything you want. And so if you come from that space of, I don't talk to people I don't know, how are you going to ever know them then?
I know.
And so Jeff, you can just play with that. All right, when I was a kid, don't talk to strangers. Why did mom and dad tell me that? Oh, because mom and dad knew things that I didn't know as a kid, that there's people out there that are going to do stuff. And so because of that, I'll keep myself safe and everything's great. Awesome. As I get older, can I talk to strangers, meet people that are new, but also have discernment, be intelligent, don't put myself in situations that someone's likely going to happen. And you can do both. And the moment you realize that, it opens up a possibility of, I'm willing now, even though it's unfamiliar, uncomfortable, insert whatever word you want, I'm willing to talk to someone that I don't know. And the moment you try it, more times than not, you'll go, that wasn't that bad. I'm alive. It was okay. I even had fun. I made a new friend. That's when you start to open it up. And we say, whatever you practice, you get good at. Now you start practicing the new way of being. And so when you were saying earlier with your writing, and you were saying something to the degree of every now and then you might fall back into an old pattern, I often find that we feel a certain way or we fall into a pattern and we judge ourselves for it. And the problem with that, there's an old expression, whatever you resist, persist. Whatever you push, you get pushed back. So if I'm angry and I judge myself that I'm not supposed to be angry, now I'm angry that I'm angry. So I perpetuate the anger.
Yes.
But if I'm angry and I say, and this applies to beliefs too, but if I'm angry and I say, you know what? Wow, I'm angry right now. What's this about? Oh, there's that thing that I really love or that person that really love. And maybe I felt that it was threatened or I was going to lose it or something like that. And I can honor the fact that I'm feeling angry. I can forgive myself for any judgment that I'm having about that. And I can gradually loosen the grip on it and just let it go. Same as the belief. Oh, this belief's coming up. I have to be perfect again. But then I wait. But do I really? Is anybody perfect? Is anyone actually expecting this to be perfect?
Yeah.
It's just a standard I'm holding myself to. Why? Oh, because back in the day, if I wasn't perfect, my thought was my parents wouldn't love me. And then say, was that true? Almost always the answer is going to be no. It's just what 6-year-old me made up, with all due respect to 6-year-old me.
Yes.
6-year-old me made up. And it's like you have a belief that a child created. And the child had the greatest intentions when he or she made that belief. and it's not accurate anymore.
Yeah.
Can we be open to it? And if we're open to it, you start to recreate your world. And the beauty is you're only one thought away from a whole different life. You're only one belief away from a whole different life. And it starts right now. Question something you've been holding on to your whole life and actually question it. Be open to the possibility. What if this is wrong? Especially the thing that you really cling to. Mm. What if that thought is wrong? And if you play with that, it'll open up a whole new world for you. And then you experiment.
I love that question. I love that. Okay, so let the listeners know where they can find you, first of all. Where can, if they want to work with you, where do they find you?
Yeah, thank you so much. I've loved this time with together. And thank you to our
listeners.
Fun. So there's a few different ways. And so obviously this is a podcast. If you like podcasts, I have a podcast called Transformation Starts Today. It's been a really beautiful experience over the last couple of years creating it. And I think that our conversations, just like you and I are having, deep, impactful, fun, all different types of worlds that we're experiencing and talking about. And I've put content out, like I alluded to earlier, on Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn since 2015, probably about 1,000 pieces of content out there that are quick, digestible, you can just practical, use it right now, make your life better. And on Instagram, it's at Dr. Jamil Syaj, DR, and there's my name. Facebook and LinkedIn, it's just Jamil Syaj, JAMILSAYEGH. And on my website, you can book a call with me. Excuse me. If you're thinking about your life right now and you're thinking about maybe there's a goal, there's a dream that you want to accomplish faster in your business, in your relationship, something you want to do in the world, maybe you're not feeling the happiness, the peace, the fulfillment that you've been longing for, we could talk about that. We can get you there. And from a healing perspective, the energy work that I do, it's been so wonderful over the last 3 years of doing this work to see miracles happening in people's physical, emotional, mental world. And so if there's something you're dealing with and it seems like whoever you're working with is not able to help you, there might be something deeper going on that's not being addressed. And having a conversation about that might lead to exactly what you're looking for.
That's awesome. I cannot tell you how much I enjoyed this conversation. Like, I have 100 more questions. I have 100 more questions. So who knows? Maybe we'll do a part two at some point. It was phenomenal. You offered so many jewels, so much wisdom, so much advice. So thank you so much for your time. Thank you so much for going and driving 15 minutes to find reliable Wi-Fi so that we could still have this conversation. Clearly, we were meant to have it today because this was so impactful. Thank you so much, Jamil. Thank you.
Thank you, Kim. I've loved this. I've loved this time together.
Thank you. So thank you, everybody, for tuning in to another episode of Masks Off for People Pleasers and Perfectionists. And if you enjoyed this episode, we would love for a review or comment. If you have questions for us about this interview, leave us a comment and ask us. And who knows, maybe we will do a part two. Until next week, everybody.